Women make up almost half of the workforce. They receive more college and graduate degrees than men. But women still earn about 77 cents for every dollar men earn, and they run only 21% of Fortune 500 companies. Why the discrepancy? Some suggest it's workplace inequality and regulatory discrimination. Others point to internal barriers. We'll talk about one particular approach to breaking the glass ceiling: becoming your own boss. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today on Central Standard, we'll talk about women who choose to be entrepreneurs. We'll also explore the challenges and advantages women face in that role. That's coming up after this news. Women are starting 1,288 new businesses per day, which is double the rate from only 3 years ago, according to the State of Women-Owned Businesses report commissioned by American Express. Those are impressive numbers, but do women at the forefront of this trend face unique challenges? And what's prompting women to become their own bosses at such a dramatic pace? Good morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and we'll be talking today with people whose knowledge of this subject comes firsthand. I'd like to start by welcoming Hillary Brown. She's founder and CEO of Hillary's Eat Well, a business of her own design. She joins us from KPR Studios in Lawrence. Good morning, Hillary.
Good morning, Gina. Thanks for having me on.
Hillary, take me back to the moment when you first decided to start up your own company. What was going on in your life and what made this seem like the right thing to do? Set the scene for me.
Well, in 2005, I opened a restaurant in Lawrence called Local Burger, and it was pretty much before that big burger trend hit. And I had developed a veggie burger that was selling. We sold about 9 different sustainably raised proteins. And I developed a veggie burger that was free from, so it was free of all the common food allergens. And it was really delicious. And it was the number 2 selling burger at Local Burger, which is pretty unheard of for a veggie burger. So in 2010, after hearing from so many different people that we should get this into retail. And I was selling it locally to some local restaurants and to the union at KU, decided to raise some money. And it initially started with friends and family money to take this product national. But just to give you a perspective of how inexperienced I was at understanding the need of how much money was required to take a product national, I only raised about $200,000. So it's been a big learning curve over the last couple years, learning about what's necessary to achieve some really lofty goals.
For those of us who aren't entrepreneurs, how far off the mark is $200,000?
Well, you know, for a national, to take a product national and to bring in the talent required to do that and pay them a wage that's reasonable, I think that probably looking at more around $1 million or a little higher to do that is probably the best place to start to really build the brand. So I was significantly less than that. So I've really spent the last couple of years doing capital raises, and I'm grateful for that. It's been, there were moments that I wanted to be in a fetal position and wished I would just rake leaves for a living, but
rake leaves for someone else's company, perhaps.
Right, exactly. But I'm so happy it's happened because now I have such a great appreciation for the tool of money and an awareness and appreciation for now if I go in working with a CFO, I can understand what they're doing, and those numbers tell a story. And they're going to either, and they need a support. You need to be able to put what you're doing into numbers.
Well,
and then integrate that with your team so we all understand it. Because I think so often we vilify money or we glorify it. And really, it's just a tool. And so this education I've gotten over the last couple of years has just been outstanding. Outstanding. Really difficult at times.
Yeah, that's a really good point about people's attitudes toward money. I wonder, just a quick question before we introduce our next guests. Do you think that some of the challenges that you might have faced right out of the gate and some of the things that cause you to want to go into a fetal position, do you think that those things are universal among small business owners, or do you think some of them have specifically to do with being a woman?
Well, I do believe it has something to do with being a woman, but I think that other entrepreneurs, males as well, we are not, I now feel passionate that we should be learning at a young age about money, starting at 5 years old. And because so many of us, I mean, many entrepreneurs are creative people. And because we don't really get an education about money unless you take an elective course or something in high school, it can be really overwhelming. And then we don't realize when we start a company that you need to find someone who that is, they have a great understanding of it so they can make your business work. Because if it doesn't work with the numbers, it's not going to work. And there goes your dream. And I don't know what the stats are, but I think many startups, at least 80% of them fail. And I think that has a lot to do with a discomfort and a lack of awareness of how you need to make those numbers work.
Well, hold that thought, because our next guest, Kelly Pruno, might have some insight on that. Kelly is the network manager for Women's Capital Connection, a group that pairs women investors with women starting businesses. Is that essentially the model, Kelly?
Exactly.
Well, tell us about that group, and tell us why it seems you think it's important for women to invest in other women. I want to know about that.
Well, back in 2007, late 2007, we did realize there was a significant gap for funding women-led companies that were scalable. Women don't have the networks. They haven't come in contact with a lot of people that men have over the years as far as funding businesses go. And so we, very grassroots ways, had a few champions and started our group, realizing that gap of funding and also realizing that a lot of women had not done this type of investing before, and there was a high need for educating these investors in what to look for in incredible companies like Hillary's. But we needed that type of education.
Warren Buffett has sort of famously attributed in part his success to his perception that he was competing as an investor with only half of the population. Do you think that in a way that your business is helping women to break a glass ceiling as investors as well as entrepreneurs?
Oh, it is. It's just another portfolio diversification for women. And it also is important for women to mentor other women as they start and grow these larger businesses. It's really important to have women mentoring women and women learning about investing, et cetera.
Well, we'll be getting back to mentoring for sure during this conversation. I do have one more guest to introduce this morning. I'd like to introduce Michelle Markey, Vice President of the Kauffman Foundation's Fast Track Program. Good morning, Michelle. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Gina.
I want to start by asking you kind of a broad question. Do you think that being a woman affects the experience of being an entrepreneur in a substantial, across-the-board kind of way, or is it from one person to another, there's just some variability?
You know, it's interesting. I think that there's obviously some variability, but across the board, there are some very similar concerns from female to female. And the more that we kind of look at this whole concept of female entrepreneurs, some concerns continue to arise. And one Kelly alluded to, and a little bit of that is building a solid network and finding the right community that can help you really develop your business. For women, we're not as well networked. We may have a lot of people we know, but when I speak of networking, I'm talking about intentional networking. So really making the right connections in the business world to help you actually build a business. Very important for women.
There are a lot of harrowing statistics out there about women in the workplace in general. Things like 70 cents to every dollar a male earns, or just the number of women who are actually leaders of Fortune 500 companies. Issues like parking spots for pregnant women, things like that come up a lot in when researching a topic like this. And I wonder how many of the women who you see starting their own businesses are doing so in order to sort of carve out a space where that kind of, at least perceived unfriendliness, doesn't exist.
I think there is some of that, but I think the push for the female entrepreneur today is not necessarily in response to that, maybe the perceived negativity, but more so the perceived opportunity, because there is so much. So finding ways to reach that brass ring of entrepreneurship today seems more achievable to women than maybe what it has in the past. You know, if you look at the views that were often given from Hollywood, you know, entrepreneurs are often looked at as these young men wearing hoodies starting business in their garage.
What kind of business are they usually starting?
You know, high tech, whether that be Facebook, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, Steve Jobs. But the reality is that brass ring of entrepreneurship is much more attainable to the regular population. And I think more and more women are seeing that.
The numbers also, when it comes to women starting their own businesses, are pretty overwhelming. And you've mentioned that there are a lot of opportunities. What are some of them? What are some of the things that you hear people saying, like what they're going for when they decide not to go work for someone else, but to take this on?
Some of the things that women are looking for. I mean, we see women in the high tech sector, and we see that here in Kansas City even. So women starting in tech businesses, we see women starting in businesses that offer them the opportunity to express, whether it be their creativity or their interesting backgrounds. So it could be anything from Etsy shops, which some people think, oh, that's just a small business. There are a lot of Etsy shops that are making five figures a month.
Explain what those are in case someone's unfamiliar.
You bet. Etsy is an online business platform, if you will. And so it's for hobbyists and crafters and handmade goods. Again, it seems like such a small, minor sort of business, but we see there's one young woman, in fact, she's one of the top sellers on Etsy, that has a Zen t-shirt shop that I think is nets about $50,000 a month. So there are a lot of ways for women to become entrepreneurs. And if there's one message that I could get across, is that there are a lot of different definitions of success. And I want women to explore what that may mean for them. So not get caught up in the Mark Zuckerberg. I don't have a brilliant tech idea, and I'm not this high-tech person. I don't have a lot of money. Entrepreneurship and success in entrepreneurship comes in a lot of forms.
You're talking a lot about self-perception right now, essentially, and that makes me think of the recent, well, not so recent now, book, Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg. And she kind of makes the case that while she acknowledges all of the institutional and regulatory discrimination that exists, she also points to barriers that women pose upon themselves, having internalized certain messages about how they should behave and what makes them valuable. Do you agree with that premise that women sometimes limit themselves?
You know, I do. I think that they limit themselves in a lot of ways. And as much as we try and push back on this, time and time again, what I hear from women is the reality is I still have this work-life balance. Now, to me, work-life balance is a little bit like chasing windmills, but I do think...
Explain that. What do you mean?
Well, I think it's a perception that everybody, that the female entrepreneur has to be everything to everyone and has to have all the answers and fit this, you know, everything schedule-wise in. And what we really recommend for women is looking at not trying to do everything, but being very selective about the things in their lives that are important to them. So whether that's a community activity, charitable activities, their entrepreneurial endeavor, and yes, some flexibility in their schedule. But it is a paradigm, I think, that women and men really need to break.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Gina Kaufman, and joining me today are Kelly Pruneau of Women's Capital Connection, Michelle Markey from the Kaufman Foundation, and a woman who's living the dream as founder and CEO of her own business, Hillary Brown of Hillary's Eat Well in Lawrence, Kansas. Hillary, let's get back to you and your story. Is any of what Michelle was just saying resonating with you?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I just recently read Lean In. It was perfect timing. But there's a quote in there that I loved. So often, you know, I have a child that's 5 years old, and there's a quote in there that said, I'm a career-loving parent, you know, rather than I'm a working mother. am a career-loving parent.
What's the distinction there?
Well, for me, it's that I feel proud that I'm doing this, and I hope and I believe my son's quite honestly better off at this great school he's at than if I was home with him all day. And that's just me. But I'd like for him to see me enjoying growing as a person and stretching beyond the bounds that I thought I could. And I also want to speak to valuing yourself. That is something that I have definitely struggled with, valuing what is my value. If I don't have dollar bills, you know, because I don't have deep pockets, but I clearly have value to this company. And I think I struggled through these capital raises identifying that. And Kelly spoke about mentorship. And I just for full disclosure, Women's Cap Network is an investor in our company. Thank you, Kelly.
We love you, Hillary.
Oh, I love you guys. And Darcy Howe really reached out to me after the investment was done and the time she has given me. And like Kelly said, having a woman mentor that has confidence in areas that you don't. And it's clear to me, even when I had Local Burger, I kept thinking I had to get it perfect and I had to scratch my way to the top and I couldn't ask for money until I had it perfect. And then this big burger trend hit. And all those people ask for money to get their business set up.
Okay,
so I realized that's, yeah, go ahead.
I want to back up and tease some of this out because you've mentioned a lot mm-hmm. of things that some of our listeners might not be familiar with. For example, Local Burger. What was that?
Right. So Local Burger is a restaurant that I opened in 2005. And it was kind of one of the first of the market sustainable fast food restaurants. And just so much passion and love behind opening that. And I didn't raise much money. I think I had $50,000 loan from a bank. That was before the big banking crisis. but I spent that before I even opened it. So I had very little understanding and I got a crash course in finance. And soon an Excel spreadsheet became my best friend. Go ahead.
Well, some of the things we were talking about before is that Michelle was mentioning that you don't have to have everything perfect and that you don't have the idea of perfection. It sounds like, you know, many entrepreneurs have to fail a few times before they hit that idea that's really a success and where they pursue it in a way that it really sustains itself and works. Do you think that there's something gender specific in the way women cope with those early failures and maybe stick with it or don't?
Yeah. I think, you know, I had my son a few years after opening Local Burger, and I've definitely grappled with I should just stop everything and just be a mother. So I do think there are times that as a woman, you think you're supposed to not lean in, as Sheryl Sandberg said, or move forward, that it's your responsibility to stay home
and take
care of your family.
What do you think about that, Kelly Pruneau? You work just regularly with women who are starting their own businesses and trying to sustain their own businesses. Do you see this as an ongoing problem?
Oh, I think women feel guilty. You know, if it rains the day our kid is in a parade, somehow we feel guilty about it, right? I mean, it's just I think it's the nature of the female to feel guilty about things. But I also, you know, I think that we need to value. I like what Hillary said. We need to value ourselves more, definitely, and realize that's one of the things. I believe that is a mistake of a lot of women that come to pitch their company for funding, is that they don't toot their own horn enough. They don't talk about the successes they've had. I don't know, somewhere along the line, we must have been told that that was mm-hmm. bragging and we shouldn't do that. We should, you know, keep that aside. Well, that's how, you know, investors invest in teams and in entrepreneurs, even more so than a great business idea. And so I think that women, you know, need to promote themselves more, to talk about their successes and to own it.
Hillary mentioned mm-hmm. also having trouble being in that position of asking for money and asking for the money to invest. Does that have a relationship with this idea of that knowing your own value?
I think that does. I think instead of feeling intimidated about going to ask for money, I think we need to switch that all around in our thinking and saying, I have a great opportunity for you, mm-hmm. investor, you know, and I'm bringing this to you as a incredible opportunity and allowing you to invest in my company. Again, without, you know, really going on and on about it, but it's a different mindset. It's a way of thinking like, I have this great opportunity and I'd like to present it to you and allow you to invest, as opposed to saying, oh, geez, I got to ask those people for money and I need to raise more money and, oh, that's mm-hmm. kind of intimidating and that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, one other thing I think is interesting, because Kelly is exactly right. There's a lot of mystery around this whole money thing and how to ask for money and how to do so in a way that's compelling enough. But I think even before women get to the money ask, they have a great idea, but closing that gap from having an idea and then developing that concept enough to even get to the point where you ask for money is a bit of an unknown for women and frankly for men, but in this case, definitely for women. So Women's Business Center offers a fast track course for the female entrepreneur that really says, what is your business idea? Is it feasible? Is there a market for it? Can you make money? And assuming there are those two answers, then what do you need to do to develop that concept? In that process, they will get to the point where maybe they will get to where Hillary got to and where Kelly's speaking of the money ask.
Yeah, that brings me to this question that as you encourage female entrepreneurship, do you have to be careful? I mean, women in general are obviously as capable as men in this arena, but not every woman would thrive in this role, just like not every man would thrive in this role. Do you ever find yourself in that uncomfortable position of encouraging the trend, but having to be honest when either it's a bad fit personality-wise or maybe a doomed concept?
From my perspective, I think more often than not, the entrepreneur figures that out on their own. As they go through the process, it becomes pretty clear to them, first of all, just from strictly from the business standpoint, is this a feasible concept? There's plenty of indicators. And going through the Fast Track New Venture course, they're exposed to that and they do the discovery. And so they come to that conclusion. They will also come to the conclusion pretty rapidly whether or not it's something they feel confident in their own role. So it's a pretty solid process.
Well, KCUR's Christy Garten visited Joni Cobb at Pipeline, which is essentially a boot camp for entrepreneurs here in Kansas City. And she brought back this audio postcard. Let's give it a listen.
With a recent Forbes.com article headline touting 11 reasons 2014 will be a breakout year for women entrepreneurs, one has to wonder, how does Kansas City stack up when it comes to supporting these women entrepreneurs? While there are no studies that specifically assess the status of women entrepreneurs in Kansas City, the entrepreneurial community overall has grown, especially since the Greater Kansas City Chamber of Commerce set a big goal of becoming the nation's most entrepreneurial city in 2011. One of the many female faces driving this movement is Joni Cobb, CEO of Pipeline.
We are a fellowship, and our model was designed because back in 2006, when we very first started putting pen to paper, it was, what are we doing to actually support the founders of these high growth companies to get them to as far as we could in terms of their growth without them having to move to the coast or what have you? And how do we support them for the long term so that they start more than one company, they become angel investors? So it was very much focused on the entrepreneur.
Each year, Pipeline selects 10 to 12 entrepreneurs who go through a year-long business leadership boot camp of sorts, with workshop modules, mentoring, and networking as key components of the program. And while they're not specifically focused on supporting the entrepreneurial dreams of women, the organization is a host of local resources that women are tapping to help grow their businesses.
Because there's a super wonderful community that is really ready to help entrepreneurs succeed. And I'd like to think, especially in the area of female entrepreneurs, like, there's really a desire. I mean, if we see an entrepreneur that's a female that's really driven to build something big, I think there's so many people that want to see that happen, that there's, you know, I'd like to think even more resources out there.
Alicia Harold, founder and CEO of MyEdMatch, an online job matching website that pairs best fit teachers and schools, was recently selected to the 2014 Pipeline Fellows class. Alicia says she is most excited to tap that group of cheerleaders.
For me, one, it's just a peer networking group, so it's so hard for both friends and family to understand what you're going through as an entrepreneur, as you're, you know, you've taken the big leap, you've started this company, and it's just someone that you can turn to that's been there before. So being able to share that and the resources that the peers themselves from the former classes have been able to bring, even this early on, has been pretty exceptional. And then I think what I'm hoping is that our company is at a point where we've had some early traction, but we're really trying to scale this and to grow across the U.S. And so as we look to do that, just hoping to benefit both from the local mentors and then the national advisors as well.
Cobb, herself a female entrepreneur, got started with Pipeline when it was just an idea sketched out on the back of a napkin. But it was not her first experience at being an entrepreneur, having founded a public affairs consulting business after leaving the legal field.
I started my consulting when I was recently divorced and I had two little girls at home, and I was terrified at the prospect of having to put on a suit and go back and work in a corporate environment and put my kids in daycare. And it just, for that doesn't fit my personality at all. And so it was that fear that drove me in my consulting. You know, I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning just like every entrepreneur going, oh my gosh, what if this doesn't work? And I was just driven.
Having to face the stress and challenges that go along with starting something from the ground up, she was happy to find her true passion in leading Pipeline, a family she loves.
One of our entrepreneurs said it is a matriarchal organization, and I took offense to that because I'm not that much older than many of our entrepreneurs. I like to think I'm more of a big sister. But, you know, it's funny because the year that the fellows go through, so that first year, there's a little more of a fear factor with me. So it may be a little more matriarchal that year. But certainly over the years, it's more of brothers and sisters because we call each other with our issues and they help me as much as I help them. And so certainly my job is to steer the group and keep them all connected. So I think I alternate between the mother-sister hat. And maybe every once in a while, fairy godmother, depending on what they need, right?
That was KCUR's Christy Garten with thoughts and insights from Women at Pipeline, a fellowship program for high-growth entrepreneurs. Something that came up quite a few times in that feature was fear. Kelly, can you talk to us about how often fear comes up in your conversations with women who are really trying to get their businesses not just to be sustainable, but in fact, to grow and expand?
I don't know that it even comes up. It's just an underlying emotion, I think, of, you know, one thing that I'll counteract that with is women are really good at asking for directions, right? I mean, we're really good at going out there and saying, I don't understand this. Tell me more. What can I do different? And I think that's a real plus and positive for women, in that if they identify with the right resources, with the right mentors, with the right programs, they'll ask the questions. They'll say, how can I do this better? What can I do differently? And then the fear subsides more. I think they don't internalize things near as much, and they're really good about asking for directions, which is incredible. It's a, you know, what we call coachable.
Yeah, there's something that you hear a lot as a woman that you have an advantage in the arena of soft skills. Can you explain what soft skills are, and are they important to this project of taking on business ownership?
Sure. Women can women need to trust their gut, because women are really good at that. They have really good intuition on what things are working and what aren't. And I think that they need to trust themselves more and realize that they can do different things. I think it's really important to be able to communicate what you need to know, and women are good about that. I think the hardest part, going back to the beginning and talking about those networks, is can they feel comfortable in opening up to those people to ask those tough questions and to get guidance. And I think overall women feel a little more able to open up to other women and feel like they can understand maybe where they come from a little bit more. And so I think that that's important.
So Hillary Brown, founder and CEO of Hillary's Eat Well, what do you think about all of this? I mean, have you had to overcome certain kinds of fear in your experience? And do you feel like some of those soft skills have helped you do that?
Oh, definitely. And what Kelly was speaking to about asking, I really like to ask people with experience and that are smarter than I am in areas what they need. And I'm going to give you an example of how that's, I think, helped this brand grow so quickly and so fast is that I talked to folks in grocery before I started, like, what do you need? What's going to make your job easier? And I listened and I integrated that into how much space we were taking up on the shelf, and even had a buyer recently thank me for thinking of them. So I'm just saying that Kelly was referencing being able to ask, that we're open to hearing about information and expert information and using that in our business.
Well, we are going to hear some expertise from our listeners soon. We'll take a short break, but stay tuned for more of this conversation about women in the workplace and particularly women at the helm of their own companies. When we come back, we'll take your calls. So get ready to share your questions and your stories, your expertise. The number is 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Central Standard will be right back.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, online at kcur.org. Coming up today on Here and Now, with college expenses soaring, doing a cost-benefit analysis can be a challenge. We'll take a closer look, plus chat with a cast member of HBO's new Silicon Valley on Here and Now from noon to 2. And we hope you'll stay with us for Up to Date. Well, we'll talk about digital disconnect and a look at life in Pakistan. That's coming up at 11. Central Standard is made possible in part by Musical Theater Heritage, presenting Bernstein's Broadway, featuring songs from West Side Story, On the Town, and Candide, hosted by George Harter at the Off-Center Theater at Crown Center. Details are online at musicaltheaterheritage.com. And Cancer Treatment Centers of America in Tulsa, with treatment options designed to strengthen immune systems by combining conventional methods with integrated therapies such as nutrition and naturopathic medicine. Details are online at cancercenter.com. The money raised during a membership drive provides the station with the financial independence needed to create and broadcast the in-depth news and information you have come to expect. You can do your part by becoming a member at kcur.org. And thanks. The time is 10:38, 45 degrees in Midtown on this rainy day. We now return to Central Standard on KCUR.
Good morning, and thanks for listening to Central Standard. The American workplace is still struggling to keep up with changing gender roles in society at large. Although many women are breadwinners for their households, they still only make 77 cents for every dollar their male colleagues earn, and only 21% of Fortune 500 companies are run by women. When faced with a not quite equal playing field, some women take matters into their own hands by starting their own businesses. But does that strategy actually eliminate bias and inequality? I'm Gina Kaufman, visiting today with Lawrence-based entrepreneur Hillary Brown, as well as the Kaufman Foundation's Michelle Markey and Kelly Pruneau of Women's Capital Connection, a group that encourages women to invest in women-run businesses. Thanks for being here, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Something that came up for me a lot when I was researching this show was that women have a particular struggle to gain access to capital to start their businesses. Why on earth would that be, Kelly?
Well, I think that goes back to what we were talking about in the building of the networks. It's understanding that there is capital out there and how to access it. And so I think that there's definitely shifts going on with, again, a group like Women's Capital Connection that started here. There's also 8 other women's angel groups throughout the country. Some focus, most of them focus on investing in women-led companies. And so there is definitely a shift in that, but it's really understanding where to go.
A few years ago, this is within the arts, but I think it has some relevance. There was a study showing that when the same play was sent out to a bunch of different agents and theater owners with a male byline and a female byline, that the greater discrimination against the female playwrights occurred among female agents and female theater owners. Is this kind of dynamic something to be aware of as more women do take charge of businesses?
I don't think so. I mean, I suppose, you know, that if the study showed that, but as far as, you know, our goal is to invest in women-led companies. So that's what we're looking for. So, you know, overall, though, the best run companies are run by both men and women at the helm, meaning, you know, it's that different perspective. So, you know, that's interesting to me.
What do you think, Michelle?
Well, you know, I think that historically women have had more of a struggle accessing capital. But just as I was referring to earlier, as entrepreneurship becomes more recognized as a viable career path, if you will, I think access to capital is also changing. And there's far more capability for women today to be able to reach the right people than maybe there was even 5 or 6 years ago. So, I mean, to me, it looks like the trends are changing in a positive way.
It seems so counterintuitive that women would have any reason to be at a disadvantage in terms of access to capital. Do you have insights into why that would be?
You know, it's only my best guess, but I think, you know, again, we keep referring back to these networks, but it's really a true statement. A lot of times women haven't known where to go, who to contact, how to do, what needs to be done to actually reach, you know, the money, if you will. And so I think that it hasn't been largely something that's been intentional. But mm-hmm. as the times have changed and as women have become more integrated, I think that, again, I think the trend is more positive than it's ever been.
Well, we're going to hear what our callers have to say at 816-235-2888 in just a moment. But I want to ask Hillary Brown of mm-hmm. Hillary's Eat Well. Listening to all of these people speak sort of theoretically and broadly about this experience, what are you hearing?
Well, you know, I just had no idea where to go for capital. It was nothing I'd learned about. I wasn't, you know, so I was really lost in that world. But I've got to say that Kansas Small Business Development Center was such a huge support over the years. And I think I had to build my confidence, but it was great to be able to go to Kansas Small Business Development Center. And then as they're talking about having these new networks, it just makes me so happy that now people will have women and more of an understanding of how to get access to that capital. And Kansas Small Business Development Center really helped me put together my plan and reviewed it over and over and tweaked it and, you know, just was a huge free, I mean, it was a free place to go to get an education in something that I really knew nothing about. And one of the other things that Kelly brought up was team. And I'll tell you, I think if there's any skill that I have that I'm pleased to have is about bringing on a team that works together well, and they have courage and talent and gifts better than you in areas, because that's the greatest part, is just pulling together a team that can take your vision to the next level. So learning to let go and, you know, not micromanage and let these people that have more talent than you go to work. That's something that I think about a lot lately.
You were talking about, we were starting out talking about fear, but there's another word that kind of is the other big word here, which is passion. How has your passion for what it is you set out to do in the first place been affected by this process of becoming a small business owner? Has it changed? Has it shifted? Is it still exactly what it was?
Well, I think it's refined it in a way that's important. I mean, I think the passion of Hillary's well was to understand systems and relationships and connections and create food products that people felt good after they ate. And when you add the finance piece to that, it only matures it more. And it makes it more accessible to the marketplace. And so I'm really, I think... It's been a struggle, but I firmly believe that what I've learned is going to make it more viable in the future.
You know, Hillary, yeah. You talked about building a team, which you've done a great job of, by the way.
Thank you.
You know, investors will invest in a stellar team that has a mediocre idea way over an incredible idea with a mediocre team. The investor is investing in that idea and the team that is able to implement it and grow that company.
Explain that. Why is a team so important?
Well, there's a lot of incredible ideas out there, right, in universities, just within entrepreneurs' brains. There's a lot of incredible ideas out there. But how do you turn that into a scalable, sustainable business? That's a really difficult thing to do. And so... the investor looks at the team and says, okay, this sounds like a great idea, but how are they going to turn this into a business? How are they going to grow this kind of business? And their mind shifts very quickly to that team.
While we're on the subject of selling the idea to an investor or a potential investor, we've got Sarah and Shawnee on the line. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
What can you share with us?
Well, one of the things I wanted to go to when you're talking about fear, and I wanted to ask Kelly and Hillary and everyone there, what do you think about the idea that if women attack their financials, I mean, really go in and dig into the numbers, they get to know and understand that those financials are simply telling them a story. But once you spend more time with your financials, as that's been my experience, the numbers become facts, and it takes some of the emotion out of them, and that makes it more of a tangible conversation when you're talking to bankers or people, mm-hmm. because now the number has less emotion. It's tied to some piece of the business, the expense. You can't, I'm sure Hillary can't do anything about whatever it costs her to refrigerate. Those things that you can change, those things that you can't. And then they become part of the story when you go forward, and that becomes less emotional for women as they're going in and discussing what they need. Because then they know it's not just because I want something and do I deserve it mm-hmm. or not. Dang on it, I can't run a restaurant without a refrigerator.
Sarah, can you talk a little bit about why this emphasis on removing emotion from things?
Well, sometimes what happens is, let's take a look at Shark Tank, for example. Every one of those people there has emotion, maybe not Mr. Wonderful, but most of them do have some emotion. However, they understand that at the end of their day, their goal is making money and extremely high profits. Well, once they know what their goal is, they can decide how much motion they're going to actually put into it. One of the problems that women can bring to a situation is that the greatest asset can become their greatest deterrent. For example, being intuitive, being compassionate, those are those soft assets that women bring to businesses, right? However, if there's too much of it and you past the tipping point, then you're making emotional decisions and you're not making decisions based on strategies, numbers, goals.
So it sounds mm-hmm. like same skill in different contexts plays out as either an asset or a detriment. Michelle Markey, what are you hearing here?
Yeah, it's interesting because sometimes we have women that literally will refer to their business as their baby. And we've had mm-hmm. women say, this is like another child of mine. And I understand that. But what that does is clouds the picture because there's so much emotion involved in it. And we've had women that have neglected to bring on team members because to bring on team members or additional staff means that they're giving up control, and that control they equate to giving their child to daycare or something like that. And so to your point, Sarah, becoming, I mean, you want to be emotionally invested in your business, but you do have to look at it from a kind of a black and white standpoint at some point, too. The numbers tell the story.
She also mentioned clarity around goals.
Oh, I think, yeah, I think that you need to have goals in front of you. And I even, you know, along with a business plan, you have to have a roadmap, okay? I mean, I have personally written 5 or 6 40-page business plans in my life. And too many times those plans got shoved into a drawer somewhere and I never, you know, revisited those, which is my problem. But anyway, I think along with that, you need to create yourself a roadmap, milestones, things that need to be achieved along the line. And yes, I love what you're saying, Sarah. Numbers do tell all, and you have got to run your business by the numbers.
Hillary, you're our resident entrepreneur today. Tell us about your changing relationship with numbers as you've gone through this experience. How many years?
Okay, so I started Local Burr in 2005 and started the Hillary's Eat Well company in 2010. I'm going to tie this back to team because I love what Sarah's saying. And, oh, man, numbers do tell the story. But how, you know what? Emotion is important. So that's where that comes in the team. So during this last couple years where I found myself mired in a world that I wasn't familiar with, finances and capital raises, I had this great team that was able to keep that emotion going. So my job is to bring back to the team how the numbers tell the story. Because I've got all these creative, really amazing people working, but they also are not finance people. So I'm doing my education so I can come back and integrate those numbers into that emotion. And I'm so glad they were able to carry the torch of that emotion when I was staring at Excel spreadsheets. So I just wanted to tie it back to the team that I believe that emotion and passion is valuable, incredibly valuable.
What are the steps?
It's about,
what are the steps you take to build that kind of a team?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. I think that for me, and this is really individual, whatever I channel through my heart really can give birth to, you know, the vision, and I believe that brought just the perfect individuals and gifts and talents that I needed. And I always had to come back to what's my goal. And for example, my goal was to have a product go nationwide. So that's important that you get people that have experience in the natural food industry, that know what brokers are and distributors and have relationships. So I knew I needed to pay enough money to bring those kind of people on. And then I'm so lucky. I would consider Becky Harpstripe, my designer, a co-founder at the company. She does such great work and has done the job of about 8 people, and we've worked together through Local Burger, and she came on at Hillary's Eat Well. And I think it's finding someone that you can work well with, and I can be really cryptic sometimes, and I swear Becky can take my gibberish and put it on into visual and put it onto paper. She's amazing. So I don't know if that all came out very clearly, but basically I think when things are channeled through my heart and I that's a good thing. I don't think it's a bad thing. Then it creates a vision, and then you can bring the right people on board. Does that make sense?
It does. We are talking to Hillary Brown of Hillary's Eat Well, as well as Michelle Markey from the Kauffman Foundation and Kelly Pruneau from Women's Capital Connection, and you, our listeners, about women in the entrepreneurial role. We've got a call from Lori in Olathe. Good morning, Lori.
Hi there. My name is Lori Whitaker. I'm president of a company called Backseat Tax Credit Exchange. My company is like an eBay for tax credits, and I had to call in because I wrote a check this morning to an investor in Hillary's Eat Well. The investor was from Missouri but had invested in Hillary's company and could not use her tax credit, so we sold it on the exchange, and she was able to actually take some money off the table right away.
Well, Lori, it sounds like you yourself are an entrepreneur. This is your business, right?
This is my business. I am.
So, and your business isn't a very numbers-driven thing. We're hearing a lot about women struggling to become numbers people. And I wonder if hearing that, clearly, if you're doing this, this is something that, you excel at.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I did not start out as a numbers person. I'm actually, I'm a lawyer, and I'm actually an international lawyer. I started out in export control law, of all things. And we started the company in the basement of our house, which I'm sure is very common, because my husband is a biotech entrepreneur, and we had a bunch of investors from all across the country who could not sell their tax credits.
What does that mean, and, selling tax credits, for those who don't know?
Well, you know, maybe the most important thing for your women entrepreneur listener to know is that the state of Kansas has a great program called the Kansas Angel Tax Credit Program. And for any company that qualifies, they can give away tax credits for any of their investors. And it's a 50% tax credit. So let's say you have an investor who invests in a startup company that qualifies. That investor invests $10,000. They get a $5,000 tax credit. So if that person is a resident of the state of Kansas and has Kansas income tax liability, that's great. They can just use that against their taxes. But if you are an investor from any other state in the union, you can sell that credit, which is also excellent. And we usually sell them at an 80 or 85%, you know, for 80 or 85 cents on the dollar. But either way, it's great for the company because their investors are essentially only putting out half the cash for that investment, but getting the whole value of their investment.
Thank you so much, Lori.
You know, yeah. And I love that she's talking about this because I'm cracking up that I even know what these are now and just love them because it makes it a lot easier to raise money. I mean, you're basically going to somebody who saying, yeah, we need $100,000, but it's really only $50,000 to them. But it is just really funny to me because I didn't think a year ago I would know what she was talking about.
Well, she mentions the Angel Tax Credit Program in Kansas. Are there other local factors that make the picture in any way distinctive here in our part of the country, or do we play into the national trends essentially on women in entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I think that there are so many resources in this community. I travel around and I hear about people in different cities that, you know, don't have the kinds of programs we have in Kansas City. And I think that really stemmed out of the fact that the Kauffman Foundation is located here. So there are opportunities to get educated all over this community, whether it be on tax credits, on raising money, on writing business plans, on whatever it might be. And I think it's incredible. And the mere fact that in the whole country, we have one of only 8 or 9 women's angel groups says something too about the community and the focus on female entrepreneurs.
That's all the time we have for today, but I'd like to thank Hillary Brown, Kelly Pruno, and Michelle Markey for being with us. It's been a real pleasure talking with you all.
Thank you.
Thanks. You so much.
We'd also like to thank Kansas Public Radio, of course, for making today's broadcast possible. You can subscribe to our podcast or listen back to today's conversations at kcur.org/centralstandard. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. Tune in tomorrow for a close look at clean energy in Kansas. We'll also have a conversation with the local musicians behind the Middle of the Map Fest, scheduled to take place this weekend. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Christy Garten with help from intern Kate Baxendale. Our announcer is Linda Scher. I'm Gina Kaufman, and this is Central Standard on KCUR. Stay tuned for Up to Date next.